Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning, welcome. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Hokomelem and Squamish speaking peoples, who have been here since time immemorial, gathering, sharing information and stories and songs and culture together. And I'm very grateful to be able to continue to do that in my own way right here on this program and other programs on CJSF. I might not have mentioned it, maybe I did. I'm Jesse. I'm the programming coordinator here at the station. And today we have a very jam-packed show for you. Later today will be on my way up to Nanaimo for the National Campus Community Radio Conference. Well, that's sort of apropos of nothing, but the show you hear on Thursday will be not live, but it'll still happen and it'll be new. And today I just have a whole bunch of cool stuff to share with you. And we'll get to all of it, but we are, of course, going to start, as we always do, with a little bit of local music. This from local superstars The Houseplants is the track Too Close to the Sun.
You'll never see me fall.
Play by Vancouver's New World Theatre tells the true stories of climate disaster survivors in British Columbia, challenging audiences with the realities of the climate crisis, while also providing an opportunity to engage with and talk about their hopes and fears. Eyes of the Beast adapts the award-winning journalism of the Climate Disaster Project into a documentary-style theatre production, with the first act featuring students from SFU's School of Contemporary Arts reading and performing the real accounts of survivors of climate-related natural disasters, including the wildfires that destroyed most of Lytton, British Columbia, in 2021. The second act is a moderated discussion, encouraging audience members to voice their feelings about climate change and its impact on the future. I'm Jesse Wensloff from CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, and I spoke with director Chelsea Haberlin about the play.
I'm the artistic director at New World Theatre, and I'm also co-directing Eyes of the Beast.
For anyone who might not be familiar, what is Eyes of the Beast?
Yeah, Eyes of the Beast is a documentary piece of theatre. It's based on journalism that was done by the Climate Disaster Project. The Climate Disaster Project is a teaching newsroom that's based out of the University of Victoria. So they work with students to gather stories of climate disaster survivors. It started locally and then it went nationally and now it's internationally. They've gathered hundreds and hundreds of stories of people who've lived through a really wide variety of climate disasters. And they are trying to find a way to share these stories. And one of the ways they thought to share them was to use theater. So we partnered with them to take the stories and to adapt them into a piece of theater. And what we ended up doing was focusing on the stories of climate disasters that happened in BC in 2021, because it was quite an extraordinary year. There was a heat dome. There were unbelievable fires, especially in the city of Lytton. In the town of Lytton. And there were also a number of floods that really affected the Fraser Valley region. So we've taken those stories and we've adapted them into a play that's just under an hour. And then in the second act, we have a community conversation. So you have an opportunity to hear the stories of climate disaster survivors. And then you have an opportunity to talk about climate change, climate disasters, how we're adapting, a chance to really come together as a community to process what you've heard in a way that is really rare when it comes to climate change.
Have you done this sort of documentary style theater before?
I have. I did a play about 10 years ago that was called The Pipeline Project. And it was a piece that was created with two settler artists and two Indigenous artists where we explore the topic of resource extraction and pipelines and Indigenous sovereignty and use the reporting that the Vancouver Observer had done, where they'd gone across the country and explored the question of pipeline development and resource extraction. So we took those stories and we adapted them into a play, intermixed them with our personal stories related to these topics. And it was a very similar structure, that piece. The first act was a play where we did the verbatim theater piece, and then the second act was a conversation. And we found it was a really effective way to engage in really animated, lively, meaningful community discussion about these really important issues that were often quite siloed and isolated in dealing with.
Yeah, I think there's something about theater that is very real and present and of the moment. And so having these sort of abstracted news reports, etc., presented in that context can open it up to people and then allow that kind of discussion where, you know, maybe just coming in, having read the pieces in The Observer, you might not be as prepared to jump right into it.
Absolutely. I mean, like, you know, right now I'm at home and I'm cooking dinner and I'm listening on the news to the stories about the fire in Squamish and people being evacuated, and I'm getting a quote from an individual saying, you know, we just ran. We don't know. Will our home be there? I don't know. And, you know, that's one little thing that I just take in my day to day. And I have no way to process that. I have no way to actually like metabolize what's happening to our beautiful province and to our community, to the people that live here, you know. And I have no ability to metabolize, like, what about when this happens to me? Because it will. This inevitably will happen to every one of us. So we need to be able to look at that and think about that and be prepared. And I think by hearing these really impactful stories and the reflections of the people who've actually been through it, and then having the chance to talk about it all together, our body can process, our brains can start to plan and think and build relationships. And I think that is the thing we need to be doing now at the moment that we're at.
Yeah, well, I think right now people are really struggling with that, what you're saying, with recognizing that there is a crisis, there is a really bad situation, lots of really bad situations that we need to do something about, but people don't, I mean, it's too much for one person to solve on their own, but there's not a 100%. Ton of direction in terms of like, okay, then what?
then what? I know. And it's really inconvenient. The then what is actually really inconvenient, and it really mm-hmm. sucks. And I think that like the things that climate change is going to demand of us are either that we make really substantial changes to our daily lives now, and we do that in a way that deeply inconveniences us now and costs us money now, or the climate change disaster is just going to come for us. And it's going to take that away from us anyway. Like, you know, and I, you know, that sounds kind of dire, but mm-hmm. I actually think it's the truth. And we don't want to look at that. We don't want to see that. And I have found that listening to these stories of people who are truly just regular, schmegular folks, just going about their lives, and then everything is gone, like in an instant. And there's no government support, there's nothing. They're literally them and their community trying to figure it out. I have actually found those stories, once I move through the kind of shock of it, I find them inspiring to ask myself, what resources do I have to be prepared? And who do I have? And what can I do now to help mitigate or to help decrease my footprint, which like is a thing that we all need to be doing and sucks to look at. It sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A big part of the path forward is just the acceptance of what is happening, or the acknowledgement of what is happening.
Yes. And we don't want to, because the economy is in a really bad position and people are deeply uncomfortable, and the problems that we see in front of us are immediate, and they're related to food, and they're related to housing, and they're immediate and they matter. But the truth is that if we ignore this, it's just going to keep getting worse. And we all know that. And it's not a future problem. It's actually a right now problem. So we need to dedicate some energy to understanding our own relationship to the weather, and which is actually like what we're talking about, and to these disasters that are on their way.
And that's a good overview of the content and themes and the potential experience of the play. What can you tell me about the other people involved, the actors, the other people involved in the production?
Mm-hmm. So we did this production the first time last fall as a professional production, professional actors, and we premiered it at the University of Victoria. We found that an academic setting was a really positive space for this, because you come to a university to have informed, engaged conversation. It's a place you go to be involved and learn. And so we found a university was a good place for it. And so we thought maybe a way to tour this production would be to actually do it with students in different university contexts. So we tried this production at SFU in partnership with the School for Contemporary Arts. It's kind of an experiment to see what does it look like if we take the script that we previously created and work on it with student performers and student designers, and kind of, you know, reinvent this piece that already existed. So we're doing it as a course here at SFU with about 20 students. And it's still in partnership with the Climate Disaster Project. So we've made the play, the first act, and then Sean Holman, who's the director of the Climate Disaster Project, will come in and facilitate the conversation in the second act. And it does feel like doing this piece with young people, with people who are still in school, who are in their 20s, is really relevant. This is something that's going to impact their generation more than it's impacted mine, more than it's impacted millennials. And so for them to be engaged feels meaningful.
Great. And what do you hope that audiences take away from the play?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit what I was saying before, that I hope audiences consider things that they can do immediately in their own lives to help to make policy changes. So how can you be encouraging the government to make substantial changes that will decrease the extraction and carbon output from our country, but also what can you do individually? And the people will be asking themselves, how am I prepared if and when climate disaster comes? And who do I have in my community that I can support, and who can support me? Who is my community? Who are the people there for me? So I hope that, yeah, all of that comes out of it.
Great. Is there anything else you think listeners should know about the play?
Tickets are only $10, so I hope you come.
Great. Thanks, Chelsea.
Thank you.
That was director Chelsea Haberlin of New World Theater. The play Eyes of the Beast runs June 18th to 21st, 2025 at 7:30 p.m. and June 21st and 22nd at 2 p.m. at the Faye and Milton Wong Experimental Theater at SFU's Goldcorp Center for the Arts in Vancouver. For CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff. This report is made possible by support from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and can be found online with stories from across the country at frequencynews.ca.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.
This is CICK News. A provincial funding source nearly 30 years running in BC has paused operations this week, leaving educators in the Skeena region scrambling to find funding for arts programming for the next school year. These programs had been funded by the BC Arts Council and were administered by a program called Art Starts in Schools. Art Starts in Schools has provided funding for arts projects in British Columbia, including those within the School District 54, for 29 years. The grants, known as Artists in the Classroom and Arts in Education, can be used for a variety of artistic disciplines and curriculum connections and are typically awarded to projects that involve a combination of an artist, a school representative, and student participation. This week, educators across the province were informed that Art Starts would be pausing all operations immediately and that this school year would be used to process invoices, but that all programs and staff were unavailable henceforth. When times are lean, arts and non-core curriculum programming are at the top of the list of programs to axe from a budgetary point of view. But Art Starts is provincial funding from an initiative that started in 1996. Michael McDermid is superintendent of School District 54 from Hazleton to Houston. I caught him yesterday to speak about what's reflected in a budget with line items and what's really at stake of disappearing in our schools with the loss of Art Starts in Schools funding.
Well, it's fair to say that the Art Starts program has brought a whole variety of artists and types of art forms to rural communities that otherwise wouldn't have been there. It's an impossibility, really, to organize those kind of programs with existing personnel and funding. So they've been operating alongside of us all along, and without that extra bit, I'm afraid that kind of support for kids programming will disappear, period.
And so what's the school board's responsibility to help educators seek out funding for special projects that are just outside of the scope of the budget of the school district?
Obviously, we have a pretty specific mandate to deliver our curriculum, the BC curriculum, within schools. Obviously, fine arts, there is a fine arts curriculum, but things like Art Starts, I think, enhance that educational experience and inspire kids and expose them to new ideas and new ways of looking at the world. And it's that extra piece, that extra layer, which I don't think will happen without this funding. And it's beyond our mandate. I'm sure there'll be individual teachers or individual school principals that will want to pursue maybe grants, but that will really come at the expense of their time outside of our work. So it will be a lot of work for some people if they want to try and maintain some of this programming, for sure.
Yeah. You were mentioning about you're working on your budget right now for next year?
Yeah. People would have heard that we're in the process of passing a budget which is legally required to be balanced, which it is. But the proposed budget for next school year will have some reductions across the board. And so Art Starts is similar in the sense that there are a lot of things that are going on pause right now because of the financial situation in the province, I think.
Do you want to say what some of those...
Sure. So some of the reductions we're proposing, obviously we're trying to minimize the impact on students as much as possible. So funding and support has been reduced in teacher time across several schools, support staff time across several schools, a reduction in administrative time in the district, and even things operating budgets, slight decreases there. Really, it's I guess I would call it an austerity budget.
You had mentioned that the claim will be that school budgets have never been better, but that it's not keeping up with inflation. But music, art, sports, is that where you're seeing the first hits are coming?
We tend to focus on our core programming when times are tough. And you're right, oftentimes it'll be things on the periphery that will face the first kind of reductions, and we'll focus more on our core operations. So that's true. And yes, and I can say that, yes, funding has increased in the system, but certainly I don't feel that it's kept up with inflation. And most superintendents in the province will tell you that. So no, it's not a reduction per se, but it's certainly not keeping up with our costs.
Who do you feel is taking the brunt of this effect?
I think that reductions in general, as I said, we're trying to protect services for kids. It may be that there are reductions in some services. If we have fewer QP staff to support individual kids, if class sizes increase slightly because of teacher reductions, will there be an impact on kids? There could be. We're hoping to make it as small as possible and not noticeable in certain schools or certain sites, but spreading it around. And hopefully there's a return to normal funding soon. So hopefully if this is the case, it won't last for much longer.
Thank you to SD54 Superintendent Mike McDermott for taking the time to speak with me. Heather Lytle is in her last year as the Smithers Secondary School drama teacher and has made a massive impact on the community's theater scene. I spoke to Heather about her history with Art Starts funding and the impact of introducing students to artistic disciplines that they otherwise would not have been exposed to.
What you were able to do when you could access Art Starts funding?
I do remember that when I first started working in this district, we used to have enough Art Starts funding that we brought in about 6 performances a year. It was really fantastic. It was probably every 5 or 6 weeks we would have another group in. It was often multicultural. There were often performers from all over the world showcasing different art forms, different music forms, theater, different puppetry, all kinds of things. Yeah. And slowly over the years, it pared down to 5 and then 4 and then 3 and 2. And then pretty soon there were none. And COVID was really the time when it started to become really challenging to access the funding and or the artists and events, and became really challenging. And that was Arts and Education, which ran through Art Starts. And then there's another, or has been another whole component of Art Starts, which is Artists in the Classrooms. This is more a working with an artist in your classroom. So I've accessed that many times. It has been somewhat of an easier process if you're wanting to access an artist that they have on their roster, and there are many to pick from. You can make a pitch to work with somebody else.
So what is the effect that you've seen when you're introducing students to maybe an art form like puppetry, or something that maybe they've not seen taken seriously before, or something that's just outside of their realm of what they've experienced so far? What do you see that turn on or click for some students?
I think so often there are young people out there that don't even know that this is a thing, and more importantly, a thing that engages or excites something in them. And so it's a matter of being exposed to it. And then you see people that just go off in directions of passion and interest and skill and talent just simply because they were exposed to something.
Yeah. When I've brought up what I've been able to gather about Art Starts funding, which is pausing operations, no one has seemed surprised by this. What do you see as the cause of something that an organization, a provincial organization that's been in business since 1996, having to suddenly pause their operations? What do you feel like as an educator that you can see that maybe, that myself, not as an educator, someone who's not in the school, that I'm not seeing?
I think it has been coming for a long time. Like I said, I've seen it shrink from a really big, wonderful thing that happened at one time to less and less that was available, and then on the flip side, more and more challenging to access or to get grant funding with. I've also, just having worked with the organization over the last few years, I know there's been a really high turnover of staff there, and I'm not sure what that is, but that's always made all the grant form process more challenging, because there's always somebody new on that end. Yeah, I couldn't really say why. I, as an arts educator and someone who believes passionately in what arts does for young people, building empathy and worldview, just understanding humans around the world and what we do and what we have, it's really sad to see less and less access to it. Yeah. And it's hard as well to go out and to bring kids to stuff, because travel is more expensive, accommodations are more expensive.
Yeah.
So it's becoming a challenging thing to also access outside of here. But always easier when we can bring people in, because it's available to more students when we bring people in.
Mm-hmm. Have you been involved in that, you have been able to access that funding?
I've participated in a few ways. One is just writing my own grants to try and bring people into my classroom. Another way was on behalf of the district to bring people in. Unfortunately, started doing that with the district right when COVID happened, and then we stopped bringing people. And then it was really slow to get back on its feet. And sometimes it's easy to get disheartened with the processes and how challenging that can be. It sometimes has been easier to just make my own connections and meet people and just bring them on our own dime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're scrappier than people give you credit for. Okay. Thanks for talking to me about this.
I reached out to Art Starts and received an automatic reply that stated, "We regret to inform you that Art Starts has made the difficult decision to pause our operations, effective at the end of June 2025. We know that services like grant delivery, artistic directory, the booking and touring service, and the Art Starts Showcase have been a valued resource for students, artists, and educators for the last 29 years, and we recognize that this news of a pause in our service may be disappointing. It has become increasingly difficult to maintain the scale of operations. We hope to refocus our organization, and we remain hopeful and optimistic for the future of Art Starts and our work supporting schools and artists across the province. As a result, the Art Starts Board has made some difficult decisions, including pausing current operations while we restructure the future of our organization. As this funding impacts more than just the local school district, I reached out to Coast Mountain School District 82, which includes schools in Kitimat, Kitwanga, Hazelton, Stewart, and Terrace, but they declined to comment at this moment. I also reached out to Art Starts Executive Director, who is not available at this time to comment. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
Some politicians love to tell us that we have to choose between policies that support people or policies that grow the economy. But we don't have to choose. A strong economy isn't only about stock markets and GDP. It's about all of us being able to afford our rent, our groceries, our medication. When we all thrive, the economy thrives too. Together, we can demand better. Take action at demandbettertoday.ca.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Jesse here, hanging out with you this half hour. Thanks to CICK for that news report.